Hey everyone, welcome to Office Hours with Cloud Posse, where we discuss the latest news and DevOps trends, Terraform insights, all sourced from our SuiteOps community, plus a live Q&A you can't find anywhere else. It's May 7th, 2025. I'm your host, Eric Osterman. Real quick, I'm the founder and CEO of Cloud Posse. We're a DevOps accelerator focused on AWS infrastructure, helping teams deploy their software faster. To learn more about what we do, just go to cloudposse.com. So how can you maximize today's session? Well, first off, our format is very informal. You can engage as much as you'd like, ask questions, and if you're curious about any of our open source tools or modules, tools like Atmos, this is a great place to ask. For those on the recording, we host these calls live. You can join us by going to cloudposse.com/officehours. Again, cloudposse.com/officehours. We'll be posting a recording of today's session to our YouTube channel. So if you want to share it with your team, just head over to youtube.com/cloudposse. All right, let's kick things off. Here's what came across my inbox. So first one, we talked about that there were rumors of OpenAI purchasing Windsurf, formerly known as Codeium, which is like a cursor alternative. Well, that has now been officially, an agreement has been officially reached. So it'll be interesting to see what that enables for Windsurf, if there'll be any tighter integrations and so forth. Anyone have any ideas what this might, what the implications of this might be? Is OpenAI looking just for another revenue stream than just selling API access? Are they going to get more intelligent data to build better models? What is the strategic value?
My, my two cents is that, this is their ability to stick their model in as the primary selected model in a popular coding tool that a lot of people are using. Cursor is paired directly with Claude. I mean, I don't mean
People,
like,
yeah.
the only thing you can use is Claude, but Sonnet is the default model in Cursor, and does a bunch of things. I think this is going to give them the ability to do something similar, and also whatever the cost for per month is for Windsurf, they now can basically get a big chunk of that in model use on their own models,
Yeah.
there. So I think it's basically just buying market share at the end of the day.
Is Windsurf also a VS Code fork, or is it a different IE altogether?
I don't remember, to be honest. I've never used it.
Yeah. Has anybody compared them or found one that they like more than the other as it is today? Then let's see, next announcement. Oops. I just close the window. Tembo pivots. We've talked about Tembo before. They had a nice Postgres as a service offering for companies that offered every plugin under the sun easily installable via cargo. I guess, they weren't maybe able to find the angle there, but they did find another angle tangentially in building the product. They built another product which helped them automatically resolve incidents that came up through Sentry. They'd done some other dabbling. We talked about DBA.ai on Office Hours previously, which was another experiment. I don't know if this is directly related to the pivot, tangentially related or otherwise, but that was another experiment they ran, which was like an autonomous DBA agent running with AI. This is interesting. It also coincides with another announcement that Neon, which is a pretty awesome database that literally allows branching just like you would with Git, perfect for preview environments or things like that. They are now in talks to be acquired by Databricks for $1 billion. A billion used to sound amazing. Now it sounds, oh, only that? But yeah. It's that's interesting. I wonder what that means for the quality of Neon as a pretty tech-forward, tech-leaning database, and the pricing of Databricks, the pricing of Neon if it gets acquired by Databricks.
Yeah, the a lot of the articles that I read there say that that's not a done deal yet. Like, don't be surprised if that deal falls through.
Also,
Yeah.
yeah. These can also sometimes be advertisements. Hey, we're looking for offers. Reach out if you're interested. Who would be the right suitor for Neon?
For sale.
Yeah. Probably.
Vercel decided that they didn't want to be in that business, and they, under the hood, they white labeled all the Vercel databases and made them Neon. So,
Yeah. So it's unlikely, therefore, they would backtrack on that if that was the direction they just took.
yeah, unless they just run it as its own, like keep running it as its own separate business, basically, and serving Vercel Cloud plus external customers.
Yeah. As an AWS user, I wouldn't mind if AWS bought it. But they don't seem to make those kinds of acquisitions.
No.
I was really surprised when they bought, was it Whisper, the encrypted chat? Or was it Whisper, or was it something else? For you, what it was. All right. Next announcement was yeah, the open source drama continues with Redis. It is back into an open source license, not the most favorable of licenses. It's the license that you better talk to your legal department if you still can use it. But so the going, taking a step back, Anti-Rez is the guy who originally started Redis as an open source project. The project got acquired or got kind of absorbed by I forget the commercial company that then commercialized it, changed the license to SSPL and created a huge brouhaha. This is the reason that MemDB was created as a fork of Redis. I think that's probably still going to have legs even after this change because for a number of reasons. So that fork is presumably still BSD3 clause, which is a very permissive license. And it's free for commercial use and has no strings attached really for commercial use. When you use AGPL, it is an infectious license. And even if you access that service over a network, it could potentially force the services connecting to it to also provide their source code under AGPL. So there are carve outs and there are situations where that doesn't happen. But that's why you better talk to your lawyers if you're going to use any software licensed AGPL.
Yeah, I've seen acquisitions fail because the startup was using something with an AGPL license.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting what happens with this. So, on the one hand, yeah, good news that it's AGPL or that it's quote, air quotes, open source. But I don't like these really. I mean, yeah, it's interesting if it'll survive with AGPL or if the air is kind of, the gas has been released or what has the air has been let out of the bag. How does the expression go? I can't say it. All right. Next announcement was some interesting developments with NATS, which is a CNCF project. And the company that originally owned it, Synadia, tried to claw it back from the CNCF. Apparently, they've reached an agreement, and that's not going to happen anymore. And this really goes to show the power of the CNCF in protecting open source and protecting companies' use of open source, and ensuring that that software will continue to operate with some guarantees. It would have been really scary if they had won this and they actually were able to withdraw the software from the CNCF again. Anyone know more about this, what transpired here? And they do talk about situations where something similar has happened, but how it followed, how it was by the book in an approved way. Part of the problem here was a trademark around gnats that they were supposed to transfer to the CNCF but never did.
I can just say that I know a few people who have used gnats, and I know that it's legacy for a lot of folks, but they ended up being pretty upset by this because their organizations were, it was going to be quite a pain to move off of that. So I know it hurts a lot of people if gnats changes like this.
Yeah, which it sounds like it's not anymore, and that they've come out and committed to su continuing supporting the CNCF version of NATS. So,
It's good to hear, but
yeah.
still a few people sweat now.
Yeah, exactly. It's a little bit of a stress test there.
Even though you might have said it's legacy, if you actually go look at who uses Nats, it's like a who's who of enterprise organizations. So, I mean, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah. And what the so NATS is a key value object store. Is this similar to what is it most similar to?
It has guaranteed messaging, so you could think of it also as
Kafka.
being some,
Okay. Is Kafka would be the an alternative.
in ways,
It's kind of like it's like a Kafka RabbitMQ combination kind of thing. So it's like it's got PubSub and a bunch of other queuing things.
Interesting.
You can have guaranteed messages. You can effectively plan for walls of data, right?
Yeah. It is pretty significant roster here. All right, next, just an announcement. We added schema validation in Atmos, so general schema validation. The idea here is that with Atmos, you, and this is a typo here, with Atmos, you can include any types of YAML in your configurations, but there's no real easy way to validate that YAML. Validation is critical to find bugs early in your CI process, for example. Also, you might depend on YAML for your GitHub Action workflows. You might depend on YAML for Kubernetes manifests and all kinds of things. So if there's a schema for it, you can set up rules to match and validate that for anything. So it improves the usability of your tooling that you have. So this is something you define in the Atmos configuration, and instead of bang import, it's supposed to be bang include here. And that's how it works. Next announcement. Oh, I skipped one, I think. Yeah, AWS Lambda, a lot of people brought this one up. So there's an init phase in Lambdas when they come up, and these were actually not being charged for compute. It was encouraged to use this for any expensive computational th things that you didn't want to affect the Lambda processing. So my guess is this was starting to be gamed more and more as free compute. For whatever reason, the party is over, and now they are charging for the init phase as well of your lambdas.
Yeah, I think that initially this wasn't a big deal. But now that you can, you can basically supply anything as a Lambda, like any image like that has layers and crazy things, people are abusing it, like you said, to do things that it was never intended to do. So I think they are going to do a lot all. I think it was really supposed to only be, like it says there, was really supposed to be like to initialize the runtime and anything you needed to do before the function actually ran, and then the function would run itself. But I think people are doing more and more in that init to get around function execution time.
Mine a little Bitcoin while before you start your process, might as well.
I think it has a limit though. It can only run for like 5 seconds or something crazy like that. It's something really like really
It's
small.
true. Yeah.
Or maybe it's 10 seconds. I don't remember exactly, but it's short. There you go.
10 seconds.
10 seconds.
All right. There. Means the Bitcoin idea would have never worked. All
Well,
right.
with an unlimited concurrency, it might, you know.
All right. And then the last one was just a minor announcement. Yes, ECS has implemented some form of native one-click rollbacks, one-click being the operative word here. I guess there is an API for it as well. Just realize that tooling like Terraform really hates that kind of operation. Anything that is stateless doesn't work with Terraform. Like code deploy, which kind of could help you do this, really sucks to use with Terraform.
Yeah, I mean, I've made the argument for a long time that Terraform really isn't a continuous delivery tool. You know, and but people keep hacking it to make it or try to make it a continuous delivery tool. So, this is just another example of one of its shortcomings in that area.
Has anyone made a stateless version, like a version of Terraform that would be suitable, like a riff on Terraform that reads HCL that would allow you to do these stateless operations? So transitioning a state, doing things that you still want to do it as code, you still want to do it programmatically, but you want to do it, statelessly.
Isn't that what was it Waypoint or what one of those HashiCorp tools was supposed to do that,
Yeah,
right?
to a degree. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I get the new ones all confused that they released there.
And Waypoint, like the open source project, was discontinued. But yeah, it was a tool that let you describe how to do deployments. Presumably in a stateless way, where the state is the code itself.
Yeah, and you could have multiple steps of what you needed to run and everything. So I think the idea there was like bring up your infrastructure with Terraform, then run, you know, then run Waypoint to basically do the steps that you need to deploy your code to that infrastructure. But I don't know, that never really materialized into like the way that people do things.
All right. That's all the announcements I had. We had an interesting discussion topic as well to d discuss today that was in the Office Hours channel. Any other announcements before we go to the Q&A? The question that was asked was in the Office Hours channel. And let me see if I can just. Aaron Raven was asking a question. Let's see. I don't know if Aaron's on the call today. If not, we'll just do our best to answer it here. Was asking about one of Cloud Posse's Terraform providers. So they've used our modules for a long time, and now they're trying to do some experiments building out a POC with our context provider. So thought just for everyone's context, let me level set first a few things so you can follow along. So first things first, if you look at any of Cloud Posse's Terraform modules, they all use something called Terraform null label. And this was the first of its kind. It was the first naming module to exist for Terraform projects, and it's pretty opinionated. It has these six dimensions you can define and label your resources. So this has worked really well for us over the years. 100% of our Terraform modules use the null label provider, and it means that every module that you use in our ecosystem works with every other module in our ecosystem. And the tags work, the labeling works, the resources all look pretty when you look in the web consoles of your, if you're using GCP or AWS or et cetera, everything is nicely labeled. And the other problem is, like, so often resources are missing critical tags, and adding tags is like a whole big whoop-de-doo for companies that haven't been practicing this from day one. When you use null label, and its conventions, it's just you get tags by default on everything that gets provisioned. It's really nice. Now, the problem with null label that I had is, well, these conventions have served us well, but let's face it, they aren't universal. Different organizations have different naming constructs that are equally robust and more specialized towards their business, maybe their cost centers and so forth. So, if you wanted to change these, there's no way we can really do that conceivably with a Terraform version that we have. The other problem with the null label is you have to pass it around everywhere. So, we came up with some really clever way of making that easier. We brought the context, the concept of a context variable to Terraform, which, if you've done any like Perl programming back in the day, I think older versions of JavaScript work this way and so forth. It's a way of basically simulating object-oriented programming by passing a context variable around. But there's a better way, actually. Unfortunately, we don't support it in all of our modules today. But if you're managing your own Terraform modules, your own, like you're building things out for GCP or Azure, or just using your own AWS modules, you can definitely take advantage of this more modern way of doing it. And we call it the context provider. So the context provider implements the same capabilities that you get with the null label module, but it's really awesome. So here's the thing. Providers, their context, if you will, in a Terraform run is every single module that has been invoked in that root module. So you can define the context once in the provider's configuration, and every module can read it. So you don't have to pass it around anymore like we had to do with the variable, the var.context. And since it's written in Go, it's extremely fast. And we support, you can come up with any naming convention. What's not clear here is these properties, they can be anything. We kept the null label conventions here for the example, but the variables here could be, the properties here could be literally anything. You can set default values for them. You can set the order in which they should be concatenated into labels. You can validate them. There's all kinds of functionality there. So we have some examples on how to use it together with Atmos, but you don't have to use Atmos to benefit from the context provider today. So let's take a, well, before I go into answering specifically that question that was asked, Matt here did most of the implementation. Anything I misrepresented or you would say better?
No, I think that pretty much covers it. I think the if you look at the documentation in the registry, it actually shows you like all the resources that are available in that provider, so you can get You can get tags out of it, you can get labels out of it, you can get a few things. So,
Yeah, so that's that. I'll share
over,
that. But
yeah, just over on the left where it says data sources, you can expand that and show there's a couple different data sources you can use.
and there are those data sources. So yeah, there's a data source for reading the configuration, for generating labels, and getting the tags depending on what you want to do. So the interesting thing in Atmos that you can do. So Atmos is Cloud Posse's solution to managing enterprise-grade Terraform. So let's say you have dozens or hundreds of accounts, you have countless resources and clusters and VPCs deployed in those, and you need some way to manage that configuration at scale. And that's the tool that's what Atmos solves in a framework kind of way. So we have some examples here of using the context provider just to get you started. And to get started with it, you would define, let's see where oops. You define your basic configuration for the context that you want to use for all of your infrastructure. This is under the provider configuration that you can specify for an Atmos stack configuration. So here we're saying that we want to have something, a dimension called product, a property called product, a property called region, a property called environment, and a property called name. We set some constraints on what those can be. And then we can inherit that everywhere. So if we go into like production here and look at the demo, we're inheriting the defaults. And then we're extending the context with some information like the environment production and the support email property, for example. These will then be available in the Terraform provider's context. And now you can use those data sources that we talked about to access those in the Terraform code itself. So the Terraform code itself, here's an example of a mock component. You see it defines a pet and size, but you see the variables aren't there like you used to have to do before with the context provider. Now instead, when you want to reference that in the code, you can just use those data sources and reference the tags. I think that's going to be in this other module that we have here. I guess this is a little bit too cute, this example, to show a practical example since it's designed to run just locally. But you can reference anything from that context. And in this case, we're just defining some locals with that get output, I think, as outputs in this case. So here's an example of what the tags would be. Here's an example of leveraging like the label that was automatically generated as part of this. So let me go and now revisit the Slack message. Where was it? There it is. All right. So trying to do some simple experiments before they build out a POC, wondering if they're doing it wrong to add any additional tags. So they've defined these properties. They are adding one custom, they're appending an additional custom tag managed by Terraform here. When they request the tags, it should automatically be creating a tag for each of the properties, right, Matt?
Yeah, the problem is that mapped by, they're only specifying the values for mapped by, but not the property of mapped by. Like, so the property mapped by has to be like defined as well. They're
Oh.
providing a value for a property that doesn't exist.
Okay. Managed by is not
Or
a
managed
client.
by, sorry, I thought it said mapped by.
Oh, okay.
I sorry,
No, I
sorry.
understand. I understand. Yeah.
That
So the
it
problem
was too small on my screen.
yeah. So it doesn't show up as a tag because it's not been defined as a property.
Right. And then they're if they just want managed by Terraform to like appear everywhere, then they can just add properties managed by to the top list that you have highlighted. And then values underneath the value, like on the next stanza up, where it says values org equals EVH, whatever, then they could say
The default
managed
there.
by equals Terraform. That's the default value for the context. But
Yeah.
then if they want to, so what they're doing there in on that data context tag is saying that when I'm generating this set of tags, I want to override the variable
Yeah.
managed by with the value Terraform, but the very the property managed by isn't defined, and that's why there's an error. And pretty sure if you run that, the Terraform provider will actually panic and tell you that that value that property doesn't exist.
Yeah. So, for example, if we said this was environment and we set this to staging, that would override this default environment that we see here.
Exactly. Yep. So that gives you the ability when you're creating that the output for that data source, you can override any value that's in the context with some other value, basically. But you can't, I mean, you can, or you can also put properties in there and add another property specifically for that tag if that's what you wanted to do. You could add the manage by property here. And then you'd have to define it. So you'd have to have a properties equals, I'm saying right on the block that you have for context tags, like in there, you could
Oh, in
define
here we could
another
also
property.
define at runtime, basically.
At runtime, you could basically define a property there and specify its value, but you have to define the property before you could set its value. So, like, if you want to use all your common tags, but this one tag that you're trying to get has some unique like property name and value you want to put in there, you just define both of them and then you're done.
So the other real power with this is, like in the open source context that we operate in, is this allows you to have any naming convention that you want, and yet it magically works with every resource provisioned and managed by that Terraform code, including adding tags. So it's really cool ability to do that. And if you're like building modules for your organization or your enterprise, this is nice because you can also enforce conventions on what variables or values have to be set. As we all know, naming things is really hard. Reducing the cognitive load to decide what you should, how you should name it is important. And the other thing we often see is like somebody might call a resource prod UE2 EVH VPC main, and another team calls it UE2 EVH prod VPC main. So it's like essentially the same information, just totally out of order, maybe different casing, sometimes camel case, sometimes snake case, and it's just painful. So this helps you standardize naming across the organization for infrastructure when you have a lot of it deployed, which is nice.
Yeah, I don't know that any of those demonstrated it, but you can. There are also properties on the context to set the either the context or the actual data source itself to be able to set the casing of the outputs of those things. So you
Right.
can control the casing of the tag key and also the tag value. When we're doing those outputs, and the same thing for like label generation and some other stuff. So
Yeah.
it's pretty configurable.
All right. So I was thinking of that. All right. Q&A. Any questions we can get answered today? Oh no, Michael Jenkins is not here today. We can't lean on him. Time to single people out. Mark Tamsky, what are you doing? What are you up to? I assume that's Mark T. No takers. Rushav, any news in the world of CI/CD pipelines and Terraform?
Hello, hello. Probably not yet. Just the other day, we were doing a little bit of a presentation at work doing the whole, hey, what if you used workflows for Terraform? Imagine not doing things locally. Isn't that annoying? Although for one thing is that although we're leaning a little bit heavily on GitHub Actions, that has made a pros and cons. For pros, we can make a use of a lot more of the existing GitHub Marketplace. Now is the first time we're trying to actually implement, hey, Atmos, that's a thing that exists. Pretty popular, people like it. Why don't we have that as part of our thing? It's kind of there, which is great. On the other side of things, there is the whole, oh, GitHub Actions. That means you're relying on some random third-party solo devs who've made one thing one time in 2020. Do we trust that? And especially with the TJ Actions things a couple of weeks back with the whole changed files. Yeah, that was a bit of a bummer, to say the least.
It showed a lot of things. I think A, it showed how quickly the community banded together, got it fixed and addressed, and I guess we were lucky that it got patched. It brought back the conversation that, look, there is a serious security concern here that hasn't been sufficiently addressed by Microsoft and the GitHub Actions marketplace that needs to be. And the software to scan and look for the vulnerabilities is just not up to speed there. And there's always going to be somebody who's able to get around that anyways. So it's isn't it the same the constant argument versus that, not invented here. Versus leveraging open source. And I mean, it's not a problem unique to Actions. It's not a problem unique to Terraform. It's not a problem unique in any of these areas.
Because it's a given that if you wrote the action yourself, there would never be a security vulnerability in it that could be exploited by anything.
Yeah, it doesn't happen that way, right? Yeah.
That being said, on that similar note is just the other day, I recently came across there's a Terraform modules is a new CLI command that they've shipped. I think it's part of 110, if not 111. Could be wrong. Is that something you guys have discussed earlier? Is this new to
No, I
me?
haven't seen it. What does the command do?
I'll pop it. I think all it does is, oh shoot, I'm not allowed to send messages. Meeting group chat, hit enter, save. Yeah, there we go. So it looks like it's a module that it's a command that effectively returns out a whole list of modules that you're declared. And I guess in some sense, it kind of aligns with here's all your upstream dependencies. This is what you're effectively relying on. But I don't know if that's
Take some
it.
credit for that. I like to think that they're copying Atmos. We've been investing in a lot of list capability lately in Atmos, among those listing components, which would be the closest thing to modules. In the way that they're doing stacks in Terraform BSL, that would make a lot of sense too. I think that they would have a command like that.
I feel like there is, I guess heated isn't the right word, but it is a lot of engaged conversations on a few of those PRs with different, I guess, Terra team or Terra mate guys trying to chip in and obviously not trying to overlap each other, trying not to step on each other's toes, but also the subtle, hey, we do this already and we do a pretty good job of it if you're interested.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, hey, they're honestly, it's that's what they should be doing. I don't think they needed to change license to do it, but they had there's nothing saying they couldn't make a better mousetrap. So yeah, not that I want them to do right, like competitively speaking, but that's the nature of the business, I guess.
I don't know. I mean, I think that my take on that one is if all the functionality that we collectively are building into Atmos and TerraGrunt and TerraMate and what TerraTeam or whatever the other thing was we said, like if that all existed natively in Terraform, I feel like collectively as a as an ecosystem, we would have so much more time to focus on other things that mattered, In improving infrastructure and modules and deployment paradigms and like all of those things. So I mean, while I guess I agree with you, like it's sort of a binary problem, but not like if all the functionality were in core and we had the ability to in a timely manner get new functionality added to core and everyone could use it in the open source way that we used to be able to use it in, then my argument would be none of these other, tools would need to exist. Like they only exist out of a void of timeliness and features that we want, right? So I think we would all be happy if that happened because there would be a lot more things that we could actually do out there. So, but while it still exists, we clearly want Atmos to be the number one tool out
Yeah, and you don't even need to
there.
bother looking at the other ones. There's the one new way, it is Atmos.
On that note, just this morning I was in the OpenTofu community stand-up video, and one of the things they mentioned, their current priority is OTelemetry, implementing that in their OpenTofu binary. So if any third-party tool like TerraGround, TerraTeam, even Atlantis, if they enable OpenTelemetry, tracing can be captured, they can be shown to the user, they can be rendered. Of course, it's not telemetry in the sense of the phone home back to the OpenTofu team. It's more or less local performance
You can
testing.
specify a telemetry endpoint,
That's exactly right, yeah. And I was curious, I guess Atmos isn't quite maybe an orchestrator, but is that something do you often do in terms of like benchmarking performance? Is that something that's even viable? That's not really something I think about when I'm running Terraform necessarily.
No, but I remember we've talked about it on Office Hours before, and I forget where I saw it. I don't know if it was a mock-up or somebody did a prototype with it, but I saw it was a really cool benchmarking. That looked like when you're using in Chrome, the inspector, the thing that does the performance, so you can see the waterfall of how all the requests went. I saw that for Terraform and it was really awesome.
Nice. Yeah, I guess to me though, the most useful information in there would be within the provider itself, to see like the time that it takes to do different things. And I don't think that's built into the provider SDK at this point. So I think all you can do is basically say, I made the RPC call over to the provider. I got a response back from the provider. Like those are the only two points, and you have a kind of a black hole of what happens inside the provider itself. So,
Yeah, that's true.
and I feel like that would be the most useful piece of information you could get,
But
here.
the core is calling each callback, if you will, function in the provider, no? In some way?
It is, but the point is, like, I called the create S3 bucket endpoint or whatever, but inside the S3 bucket endpoint there might be like four other calls that actually take place. Like there might be four API calls under the hood, and you're going to lose all that detail like that's in the provider because you're only going to get the edge of the provider. I entered the provider at this time. I got a result back from the provider at this time,
And you don't know
and
anything
you
more.
don't know what happened in between. So it's like saying, I called my web service and then I got a response back from the web service, but you don't actually have tracing into the web service itself. Like it's the same kind of problem here. Not that I'm saying it wouldn't be useful. I'm just saying it loses a lot of the most useful data by not having tracing enabled inside the provider framework. Because then for each of your calls that you're doing to, reading state and calling this API and calling that API and writing to state and doing this, like you could actually trace all of those things and you could see how long each one of those pieces took as part of the thing. So right now you're just going to see, I created an S3 bucket. It was created. Took 4 seconds, but I have no idea why it took 4 seconds, that kind of thing. So anyway, I nerd out about this stuff, so I talk too much about it.
An interesting thing to work on with the with the right opportunity.
Well, yeah, you basically need the core team to agree to put OTel into the provider framework SDK. And if you did that, then then every provider could opt into it basically at that point.
Could there be something that could still be gleaned by a proxy sitting in between the requests and the cloud, so you know each request?
I mean, potentially you could, yeah, you could hook just like the, if they're all HTTP requests, sure, but there's lots of providers that don't use HTTP to do like all this stuff.
Any other topics we can dive into today?
Maybe out of curiosity, one just for testing wise, when you're testing your changes to your modules locally and such, do you have a certain procedure or standard? Do you use like local stack? What do you tend to use in order to test that your models are doing what they're doing before going ahead and releasing?
So I think there's plenty of great testing built into native Terraform these days. We still predominantly use TerraTest, which is a Go library. So it gives you superpowers in terms of testing, but it doesn't favor non-Go developers. You can write the code simple enough that it mostly reads like pseudocode, and we've done that. We have also created our own test helper library at Cloud Posse that we use, but again, Go library. Ben has been working on local stack, actually, proving that we can deploy our whole reference architecture on local stack. So I think there are different purposes of testing, different types of testing, let's say. You're not going to do that to spin up an ECS cluster to show you can do a deployment of your app to the ECS cluster running on local stack, right? That's not the proof of concept there. But you can prove that that your tooling that provisions your environments, your infrastructure itself works reliably in a cost-effective manner without having to actually provision those resources, and you can iterate on that locally. But it's going to be like ACT. If you've ever used ACT for GitHub Actions, since I know you spend a lot of time with GitHub Actions, you can get something working perfectly fine on ACT locally that doesn't work on GitHub Actions, vice versa. So we've been impressed, I think, right, Ben, about the overall functionality of local stack and how much it does.
Yeah, most of our infrastructure, our reference architecture, can be stood up on it. There's a few things that maybe are a little bit more troublesome to deploy. Terraform State is one of them, but there we got some automation and Atmos config to set that up in an easy pattern. So hopefully, I can demo that
And
somewhat
you
soon.
ran into some RAM share issue, I think, right?
Yeah, that was. One of the local stack's upstream libraries had I think it was missing implementation or something was wrong, but they've been really good and really fast at turnaround PRs. So
Yeah, I was really impressed by that. Yeah, so that's
I
cool.
think it was like 10 minutes after I messaged them, they had a PR open. So they're
That was the AI. That was Tembo AI running there in the background. Wouldn't that be freaking cool? I mean, in the future, your customers ask a feature request and a PR opens up. Yep, here's that feature. Provided there's some approval process before
Yeah, provided product manager AI
that. Signs off on
determined
it.
that it's a
Yeah.
good idea.
Exactly. Yeah, your AI product manager, though. Yeah. The AI agent product manager.
On the approvals process, just have one last link to share, and maybe this was covered in an earlier one, but for CI testing and such, oftentimes you rely on GitHub Actions, ACT, all manners of things to do it off your laptop. And then just the other day, I came across this. I believe this is by DHH, the guy behind
Yeah, we
Basecamp.
talked about it on Office Hours.
Oh,
Yeah.
perfect, perfect. My
Local
bad.
sign-offs. Yeah. It is that's fine when you're small. We talked about it a little bit. I think the summary and Matt summarized it nicely was just, that's fine if you're a small team and anyone who can push domain can push domain anyways. But it's really just Scout's honor. I've tested this locally. It's like a command to run that you've just tested it locally. But if you need to verify that the actual commit was actually tested without tampering and actually is reproducible. That's the other key point, is it doesn't ensure reproducible builds that, yeah, it worked successfully on your machine. That doesn't mean it's going to work on my machine or in the CI system or elsewhere.
Yeah, or
So.
you